Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and this podcast for Aspire is being recorded and aired on September 11th, 2022. And we're going to be looking at something that is very, very essential, not only to an authentic spiritual practice, but I feel to a person's life. And that element that I am referring to and that we're going to be talking about, or I am, is going to be talking about, is silence. It is only in the silence that the real work is done, inner work. People make fun of inner work now. When I was young and doing my thing, working on myself or practicing silence and the effort of spiritual awakening was considered to be a norm. You know, we just did it because we knew that we couldn't change the world and the people of the world and the people in the world, so we just worked on ourselves. We practiced diligently to work on ourselves. I went to India, the whole thing. It was a very beautiful experience. But the bottom line, the absolute bottom line, was to enter into the silence. And in that silence was everything that we were looking for. We had an old saying in the ashram, silence is the answer. But I don't think that carries over too well when you think in terms of the loud music that we listen to and all of the input we get in the course of a day through news and social media. We are not a very quiet people. And so for a lot of us, this idea of silence is essential, but for the majority of people, it is noise that is essential. So when you're entering into an authentic spiritual practice, it's all about the introduction to silence, not only learning to listen to it when you are meditating formally, but also when you're going about your daily life. How to carry your silence with you is the art of an authentic spiritual practice. And for the most part, we are enamored more with our thoughts than we should be. We often think of our thoughts as being smart or intelligent or whatever, and what they do is they restrict me from the ability to listen to that language of life, which is through silence. So let's get to the questions. The first one comes from Wendell in Texas, no less. I don't know how many emails I get or questions from Texas because a lot of people just don't want to tell me where they're living, but it's kind of surprising to me that Texas. How do I speak in the silence you speak of, says Wendell. It is a very difficult thing for me to quiet my mind. In fact, I find it impossible. Wendell. Well, Wendell, you have to chip away at it. That I felt the same way when I started some 50 some years ago. I felt the same way. I thought, I'm never going to get this. And that's my mind. My mind was telling me, you can't do this. You can't do this. And one of the things I had to recognize was that my mind was giving me subliminal messages through the unconscious that this was not something I could do or something that was even possible to do. So I had to really, really work on it. And this is what makes a teacher so important, to help the student understand the language of the human brain and what it is impulsing to me and telling me is possible and impossible, and that which is of the silence that reveals great insight, not thought. It reveals impression. When you get good at your silence, you will find you no longer need to think anymore. Your brain will do what it's going to do, but you will have the vantage point of third person. You will be able to step back away from your conscious mind, away from your unconscious mind, and into third person, where you see yourself as him and not you. Once that has been realized, then to keep that delicate balance, you will have to live a quieter life, a more insightful life, which means you can't be seduced by the whole idea of your emotionality reducing you down to nothing but pure thought. Now, it is an embarrassing and humiliating experience to realize the aptitude and the whole acuity of our mental constraints. It's just really embarrassing. If you were to tell someone what a yo-yo you might be, what an obsessive compulsive thinker you are, it would probably be very, very dejecting, let's put it that way. We talk to our minds far too much. We have conversations with them. Sometimes we recognize these conversations, but most of the time we don't. And these conversations can be about, oh, what we're going to do in a day, the pros and cons of a day, the pros and cons of events or of choices we have to make. We have all sorts of rumors going on and assumptions and presumptions in our mind that are constantly flowing through, and the intellect catches them based on genetic predispositions that I have in me and you have in you. And of course, let me give you one for me and it'll help you. One of the ones that old Greg likes to get involved with is constant worry, obsession with worry. And it can be about anything. I mean, it can be about absolutely anything, from my precious pooch that I love so much, to what I'm going to eat, you know, for dinner, or where I'm going to go, or if I'm going to go somewhere, and I want to bargain out the time. Do I have time to do this? All of this is a big waste of Greg's energy, and he can worry about anything. So I let him go on and worry. He can do what he needs to do, but he's going to do that without my presence being involved. And that's the key. I don't bring my attentions to his obsessions and compulsions. And when he learns that he's not going to get, Wendell, a response from me, when he learns that I am not going to act nor react to what he is impulsing me to believe or think or is tempting me to do, that is when he learns to be, shall we say, a little more quiet, a little more subdued, just a little more. In that, I can jump into that gap, that pause, that space between my thoughts, and I can actually live there. You can live there. Any of us can live there. It is a very sacred place that indwells us. And if you are willing to explore this with some sense of discipline, that word that everybody hates, with some sense of discipline, some sense of restraint, then you'll start to feel the ebb and flow. Now, how long will this take? Everybody asks me that. And Wendell, I know you're not here to ask me that question, but that's the one everybody asks. I don't know. It depends on how knuckleheaded you are, how hardened you are, how hardened your heart is, how stubborn you might be in your genetic nature, how afraid you might be, how lonely you probably are. Most people are lonely and they don't even know it. There is so many things at play here that I can't predict. It would be impossible, silly, and ridiculous for me to do that. So I don't go there. I never go there. My practice is moment to moment to moment. So I'm sitting here in my little studio. making this a podcast for you. And the only thing I am focused on is the podcast. Now, am I thinking while I'm doing it? No. This is coming from another shore. And Greg would, if he were allowed, and I won't allow it, I won't even, give it the time of day. If Greg were allowed, he would say, don't talk like this. This will get you in trouble or whatever. He'll start worrying about it. So what you hear right now is not intellect. What you hear right now is the river, the flow coming to you. It's coming through the human voice, and it's not coming through the filter of Greg and his genetic heritage. So with that being said, and you hopefully understanding what that could mean, I do speak, I do teach, and I leave it there. Buddha did the same thing. Jesus did the same thing. All great teachers do the same thing. They talk in a way in which the human subsides just ever so slightly to the river, the flow, the oceanic presence of love that lives within. And these words that you are hearing are very, very important. I was good friends at one time, in an acquaintance way, with Richard Bach, the author of Jonathan Livingston Seagull. And I'll never forget, we were sitting in a TV studio down in San Diego, Channel 8, and we were going to do an interview with Richard Bach. And the thing that was interesting about it was we were in a conversation about Jonathan Seagull, which is one of my very favorite stories. I absolutely adore it, and to this day, I live by it. I absolutely do. And I asked him, what was important to you about that book? And he was, mulling over in his mind what he was going to say. He said, actually, I don't agree with what Jonathan did. I don't agree with what he said. And there were things about Jonathan Seagull that I just didn't like. But I wrote them anyway because he said they kept coming through me. And I now understand what he meant. It took me all these years to realize what a knuckle brain I am, what he was really saying. He was saying there was a creative ebb and flow from the infinite within him, flowing through him as he wrote the book. But Richard himself did not always agree with Jonathan. And he had that mind, that analytical mind, that German mentality. And it is, that straightforward kind of, analytical, intellectual perception. And that's the way he operated in his life. Of course, that didn't work well, but that's the way he operated in his life. Nonetheless, he wrote beautiful books, Illusions, Jonathan Seagull, and other books. Nothing, though, that was like Jonathan Seagull, and hence he made a masterpiece, but it wasn't his. He would tell you to this day, Jonathan Livingston Seagull wrote that book, and he would be right. I would say the same thing. Out of his silence came the river that flowed to his door to help create the, shall we say, teachings of a seagull and what spiritual awakening is all about, the effort of it. So it comes in different forms, Wendell, and I hope this helps you. You don't have to be a monk sitting in the corner meditating for the rest of your life, although that would not be a bad thing. That'd be really a great thing. But if that isn't the case with you, then simply remember this. Discipline is not doing those things that hurt you. I'm out of here. Thank you for your beautiful question, Wendell, and I wish you well. And if you need more help, you know my phone number. I gave it to you, and I hope you'll forgive me. Namaste. Well, that's the week. I'll be back again next week. I hope you will join me. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.